There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. This is a special weekend edition podcast 590. July 22nd, 2012, and this means a special interview. Nasser, introduce this Swedish driver.
Yes, sir. First of all, my thanks to Reine Wessel for his time. We had this wonderful motorsports chat for almost an hour, and he is now spending his time between Sweden and Thailand. And he developed an interest in motor racing, and in the early 60s started racing Mini Coopers, moved up to F3, Swedish Formula 3, won the championship in 1967. And interestingly, while I was doing some research on his career, I find out that the car he drove to victory was owned by a gentleman in Santa Cruz, California. So I contacted him, and he said, well, I just recently sold it back to a gentleman in Sweden because actually the guy who bought it is a friend of Reine Wessel. They think it's a, you know, important part of Swedish racing history, so they took the car back. Then when Jochen Rindt was killed in 1970 at Monza, Colin Chapman gave him the opportunity to race at Watkins Glen, which was his first race, and in the first race he finished third. Not many people start their Grand Prix career by being on the podium. Now, unfortunately for him, the race was won by Emerson Fittipaldi, and that was only his fourth or fifth race. And then Fittipaldi was the golden, you know, boy of Colin Chapman anyway. So after Lotus, he drove for BRM, did other sports car races. A very interesting and fascinating career. He raced all over places like Enna in Sicily, Rouen, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, of course, and then raced in South America, Sebring. So traveled all over the world, and now he is enjoying life, like he said, and spending time between Sweden, where he was telling it was raining all day the day we spoke. And, of course, hanging out in Thailand, which is always a fun place to go. So my thanks to Reine Wessel. I appreciate his cooperation very much. Please enjoy the conversation. Thank you.
Okay, Reine, you started racing a Mini Cooper in 1962. How did you get the racing bug, and how old were you when you started doing real racing?
Yeah, I started 62. I was always crazy about motorbikes. I came in to when I polished some of the champions, Swedish champions motorbikes, you know.
So yeah. Was there any interest in your family, or how did you pick up interest in motor racing?
Oh, it was next to my school, and I had my grandparents living just over the street, and my uncle was working in a factory that those friends run. So every time I ran off after school, said hello to my grandmom and papa, and then ran off to the garage, polish all this Gold Star and ATS, TT. And I was also doing I was involved in this until one of the speedway drivers chased into cars. Then I thought it was better. Always took a car with some friends to go to watch races. So one day, me and my friend said, why? We will go to pay all these things and all the trouble to come into the pits. So we entered a car instead, and then we came into the pits.
Interesting.
And that's how it started racing, actually.
Very good. Now, I think, I hope I have the year right, 1966, I believe it was. You were instructor at Karlskoga, and here comes a young Swedish kid by the name of Bank Ronald Peterson trying to get his F3 license. Yeah. Do you remember that day?
Yeah, 65 or 66.
Okay. And what was your impression of him before he got going in F3 against you as a driver?
I did not know him at all because he came from go-kart. And he's doing all right. Showed me in a Mercedes diesel how he liked cornering at Karlskoga, and he was doing all right. So I signed his license. But then I joked with him sometimes. That's the worst thing I ever done, you know, to give him the license. But it was more a joke. So I liked him very much. We had a lot of good fun.
Yeah, and you guys were great competitors against each other. Were you friends with him later in life when both of you went to Formula One?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, after racing, we always had fun. I mean, at that time, we always could, we were all together. It was after the Formula 3, you know, there was Tim Schenkenhauer, myself, and Ronnie going out for dinner and partying.
Yeah, you mentioned Howden Ganley. You know, he lives not too far from where I live here in California. Would you like to convey a message to him? I can call him and tell him I spoke to you.
Yeah, you can do. I will meet him in August. I saw him at Silverstone, actually.
Okay, good. You're in touch with him then.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and I heard from John Fitzpatrick that Tim Schenken was there. In south of Spain. So it's also coming for the... That's a 50-year jubilee we have in Stuttgart.
Oh, very interesting.
In 25th of August. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, very good. Now,
I'm a lot on the Facebook. I sent in a lot of nice pictures from before, and I just sent one telling that I was in René Dreyfus' restaurant in New York, must have been late 70, because he was on the picture here with the Scuderia Ferrari from 65 or something.
Very interesting.
It's very nice to see all the pictures. If you go in there, you can see additional to what we're talking about. I put in a lot of pictures because I have all floor here full of pictures from long, long time ago. And some I adding into the Facebook and some I put into myself. And then I put them together and put it in somewhere to save it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying those photographs, and your Facebook is how I got in touch with you. So thank you for being accessible.
Yeah, good.
Okay, now
how is everything in California now?
Yeah, well, the sun is shining, and, I'm loving life, that's for sure. And we have a couple of good tracks in this area. I'm not too far from Laguna Seca and Sears Point, so it's interesting.
Good. Here is threat. Dreadful weather, you know. Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, raining. Oh.
I hope it gets better. Okay, now in 1967, you won the Swedish Formula 3 Championship. Tell us a little bit about the season. What were the high points and what victories were more memorable for you?
Yeah, you know, when I started, I think that was 66. When I went to Yugoslavia and Opatia, and I had an old Cooper. I don't know what they call the chassis, but that I traded in with Yngve Rosqvist. You know, I was racing in his team, Yngve Rosqvist Racing Team. Mm-hmm. So after a season in the ice championship, ice racing championship, where I think I became second in the championship, and then Yngve was a good friend and liked racing. So I traded in my old Cooper, Mini Cooper, and I get a Formula 3 car. And it was very, very bad, you know, in the beginning. But I like to develop things. That's how I came in, you know. I try to tune and develop things from beginning and try how far I could come. And I won the two last races with that one after a lot of modifications in Sweden, yes. And Pico Troberg had a very nice BT16. So I sold my Cooper and bought his car. I think he was a little bit fed up because I won over him and I had an old car and he had a new one. But that made me be able to buy his car in a decent price, you know, at a decent price. So then that was the best season I ever did. It was very, very good. Then I changed to the Techno. Okay. And then to the Chevron, yeah.
How, in those days, the year you won the Swedish Championship, how easy was it to get sponsorship to go racing?
No sponsorship. No, very. I had some from a sausage company, but they only gave mainly sausages. You can't live on sausages all your life. For 67, after that, 66, I was with Shell, so I had a contract with Shell.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, not much money, mainly little bit money and some fuel. So there was fuel and sausages and hamburgers.
Oh, wow.
That was, and starting money. At that time, we get starting money, you know.
Right.
Now they have to pay.
Yeah. Now, did you know that the car you took to championship victory in 1967, the Brabham, this was till recently residing in Santa Cruz, California, which is not too far from where I am?
Yes, but now it's sold.
Yeah, it's back in Sweden, I am told by the owner.
Yeah. It's one, a good friend of mine who have it. And him and Roland Hedmo, they're to assemble it now and try to do some racing.
Oh, wow. So
That's
very good. Okay, I have a question for you. Were you in the Formula 3 race in Denmark? I believe the track was Jørsalandring, where Peter Revson's brother Douglas was killed?
No.
You were not in that race?
No. I was not there. I remember that race, but I think I did not agree with the owner of the circuit, who was run over in that race, I think, and died.
Yeah, he was also killed in that accident, right?
Yes. And I did something else somewhere. I can't remember. But I was not there.
Okay. Now, in 1968, you won more than 10 races, quite a few in Spain, and in one in Brno, Czechoslovakia. What was the racing atmosphere in the what they would call behind the Iron Curtain? Did you find the fans to be as passionate about racing as in Western Europe?
Yeah. They liked very much. Racing was fantastic. A lot of public, but I remember when I was going to be in the Vlaslikplatz, you know, in Hotel Europe, and that was full, so I had to go somewhere else. outside to stay in a hotel, which I didn't like. So he said, we go early in the morning, go back to Sweden or where we should go. And I thought it was a big maneuver. But there was the invasion, you know, there was a war. A lot of parades meeting me, and I heard all these jets and things starting. So I did not know until I came to Germany that it was a war, invasion. So that was a little bit of a surprise. Otherwise, good fun.
Okay.
Good racing.
Good. The 1969 Monaco Formula 3 race, you and Ronnie all the way, was this one of the most exciting battles you had in racing?
Mainly for the public, I think.
How about for you?
It was interesting, but I was a little bit disappointed on myself, but I say it's the same if brakes fading or if braking too late. That's always the same. But that's how Ronnie actually won. And they finished the race one lap too early.
Oh.
You know, that was so excited, yeah.
Wow. Okay, same season, 1969, you won races in three historical but very different racing circuits, Po and Moleri in France and Sebring, Florida, here in the United States. Your thoughts and impression of those races and tracks?
Yeah. No, I always like to have, not any special. I like street racing mainly. Not his airfield things, but every race was a new challenge. Have to accept it and to learn it and try to win that.
Okay. Now
that's the only thing.
What was your impression of Moleri? Did you obviously you must have raced on the bank portion also?
Yes.
Was
I
that
did,
fun?
Yeah.
Was that fun?
Yeah, it was all right. But Ronnie had also there, he had an accident. And I had broken my gearbox. So I had to join him in the ambulance. So that's another ambulance. I mean, you know, not the ambulance, it looked like, you know, those black one, like if you should go to jail or to a funeral or something.
Hers.
And he was burned, yeah. And the helicopter could not come to the place and take him away. So that's why we had to go in that transporter. But coming to the hospital, there should have not been anywhere to land anyhow with a helicopter. So he just full asleep. And,
okay.
That time he wake up after a couple of hours. But he was burned quite badly and... But
now, you said you like street racing, like Po, Monte Carlo. Do you find them more challenging than a natural track like Spa or Silverstone?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Okay. In Formula One, you made a dream debut here in the United States at Watkins Glen in 1970, and right away you were on the podium in third place. Very few people have started Formula One like that. What do you remember most from that race?
I remember mostly that Pedro Rodriguez came out in front. He had to top up with some fuel. Otherwise, we should have been first and second, Emerson and I. But it was, when you have a good car, it's not difficult. It's more difficult to have a bad car and be a good driver, you know, than being a bad driver and have a good car.
Yeah. And how crucial, how important was this performance in getting a full-time ride for 1971 with Lotus?
Of course, I had a contract for the 71 included in a deal.
Oh, good.
But then I was thrown out for 72 because they promised Dave Walker to, if he won the English Formula 3 Championship, he should have a Formula 1 drive. And he could not, did not perform well. So I had a dreadful season, actually. I should have had that 72 season with a Lotus. Then I was ready for challenge for the win. But then when I was thrown out, I had this BRM thing. And we were about 7 drivers on, I think, mostly 3 cars. Useless things.
Oh, yeah.
But then Colin called me back for the 2 last races, 72. And I was sure I did not have any car for BRM was Marlboro. And Lotus was John Player. So that was not too good. But anyhow, I was quick in qualifying. Then they called me into the pits and took the wheels off until Emerson was quicker. And then I was quicker than Emerson in the race. And Colin asked me if I would like to sign a contract for 1973 with Ronnie. And I said no. No, I did not even say thank you. No, I said no. I was finished. Lost interest.
Now, you're saying that Colin offered you a ride in 73?
Yes.
Why did you turn it down?
I did not like it anymore. I lost interest. I was just finished. It's, you know, too much behind the scene. When I take my wheels off and always these things. The year before I was at Watkins, mm-hmm. and I complained about my brakes on the starting line. I said, go. And I was pumping the brakes up until it did not was anything more to pump. And then I hit the guardrail in a nice way, so I just came out all right. But you have to trust each other, you know, if you should do well.
Very true. Now, going back to the 1971 season, you were fourth in the opening round in South Africa. How was your relationship with Colin at that stage?
Yeah, we did not have any problems. It was just that we should have been equal number one driver, but Emerson always get the best treatment, and Emerson, he moved to England and living next to Colin and talking and meeting each other. And at that time I was living in Switzerland and I did not like to go to England. So he did most of testing and I had other things.
Okay.
I raced sports cars also.
Yes. Yeah,
at the same time,
We'll come to that in a minute. Now, during the 71 season, the team, Lotus team, also experimented with Pratt & Whitney turbine power. We have a question for you on this from our listener in Australia. His name is Leon, and he would like to know, what was it like driving the Lotus 56B, and how did you compensate for the turbine lag while it spooled up?
Yeah, it was not too bad to accept that style. I mean, you had to brake at 300 meter, and then you had to full throttle on when it was 150 left, and then you had the delay was just perfect, so you just had to lift the brakes in the corner, and then it goes poof. But the problem was, it had 240 horsepower idling, and you had double brakes, and in the race you had 200 liter more fuel, so that's 200 kilo nearly. So it was impossible. And when Colin put that car out for me at Silverstone, and I had done testing with a 72, and he put out that turbine from the trailer and said, here is your car. And he sold my Lotus 72 to a South African. So perhaps I said something wrong to him then, so, which was not very nice, but I had to repeat it too.
Yeah. Now, how was your relationship with Peter War?
Yeah, it's good. He was all right. He was all right, but he was only the man managing all the things Colin told him.
But you did not have the relationship he had with Nigel Mansell. I mean, it was okay.
No, I don't know what how they were together.
Oh, they hated each other.
Yeah, that I can understand. But no, he was a good friend. He's doing all right together.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that Colin replaced you with Dave Walker, who was from Australia. Stage of the season, first of all, did you have a contract with Colin for 72? And if not, what stage of the season he told you that you won't be driving for him?
Oh, that was was it in France? Because I did not know it. There came up a Swedish journalist who actually asked me what I was going to do because I was sacked.
Oh, wow.
I said I did not know, yeah. But I had an option. Actually, they had an option for 72. But,
okay.
I was out and they Walker was in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he really did not do anything. Now, when Colin called you back towards the end of the season, did you feel comfortable going back to the same team and same style of management?
Yeah, I did not know what was going to happen for 73, and it was too much, as I said, behind the scene, pushing, you know, PRM, Tim Parnell, and Louis Stanley. They could call me up on Thursday to tell me I had to be in a circuit so-so, or that I did not have a car. So it was a dreadful season.
Now, Louis T. Stanley and Colin Chapman both were great characters. How would you compare these two team owners?
Difficult to compare.
Okay, was your relationship with Louis Stanley better than what you had with Chapman in terms of how he treated you?
No, I don't think so. Same, you know, everything behind the scene, you know, you're only a small thing in racing. It's, if you're not a favorite in a team, you're nothing.
Wow. So do you think that things have changed since your time as far as driver-management relationship is concerned compared to what we have today? A lot of drivers complain that, you know, they're not getting the same treatment because of this or because of that. How do you compare the scene now as compared to back your days of driving?
It's difficult to tell because you have some good teams. I mean, I like the team of McLaren with Ron Dennis. I drove some cars from him, you know, in the Formula 2, and it's making good. And then you have Vettel, you have
Red Bull.
Yeah. My friend from BRM, you know.
Okay.
Now, who lost the eye, you know, in Clermont-Ferrand?
Yeah, Helmut Marko.
Yeah, that's correct. They're making good, you know, they have a team. They know how to make a team, you know.
Yeah. Are you friends with Dr. Marko?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Now, the first ever Swedish Grand Prix was in 1973, and your compadre, Ronnie, almost won it. Is it true you were sponsored by an aftershave company?
Yes.
How did you get that deal?
Yeah, it's a lot of spraying perfumes and aftershave around in the country. More than driving, you know. Mm-hmm. When on the warming up lap on that march, I was trying my brakes and braked hard because I had a special line into the cars on one corner, and all suspension fall off. So I did not even come to the starting line.
Yeah.
And Robin Hurd, he already gone by then. So then they gave me a car as compensation in France. Mm-hmm. That was a year after, perhaps. And then at Anderstorp, the rear suspension fall off. Then I had a race in Paul Ricard. Then they poured, the petrol filling behind the neck.
Wow.
On the cars. So they had overfilled the tank and some petrol came down to the safety belt. So I started and then my eyes started to be watering and it was such a pain so I had to stop and go to the hospital.
Jeez.
And burnt the bad thing. The good thing. So that was the end. And of course, Joe Bonnier died in 72. So, I did not feel for it anymore. I like to enjoy. And still, I must say I enjoy life. Not in the weather here in Motala, though, because I go to Stuttgart and I go back to Thailand. That's my life nowadays.
Okay. Now, when you had this problem with the March cars, did you take your case to Honorable Max Mosley?
No. He was always involved, you know, Robin Hurd and him. And I think I had my Bortles car in that last race. But, you know, they did not. I don't know where they get exams from. I was technical mechanical teaching and schooling. I mean, everything falls off. And in such a speed, it's no good.
Yeah, sure. Now, you also raced at Le Mans, and you mentioned Joe Bonnier. Did you enjoy sports car racing as much as Formula One? And if you could tell us a little bit about your association and friendship with Joe Bonnier, please.
Yeah, he was like a big brother to me. And I must say, I like sports car better than Formula One because I like to drive. You know, when you can drive a long race, 1,000 kilometers, 24 hours, that's racing. You know, this short 2 hour stint, you know. And the circuits are becoming bigger and bigger. And I noticed when at Silverstone, you can't recognize the cars. You can't recognize the drivers. They have such a funny color on the helmets. It's impossible to know who they are. I mean, for us who are interested, we perhaps can understand. But people sitting outside, paying a lot of money, how could they know who is the drivers?
No, I agree with you. Okay, you raced a Porsche with success in European GT Series in 1975, and then you also raced a Chevy Camaro in touring cars. Tell us a little bit about your time in these cars and in these series, please.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was just, we had some good sponsors, and there was, I had a Porsche 75 when I helped Chickentans and I helped Hartwig Bettrams to win the European Championship. And then I had that deal with a sausage company, Sibylla. And I had 2, 3, 4 cars and a big team. And that's the easiest way to lose a lot of money. Try to run a private racing team. So that's how it ended up. It was just good fun. Mainly we raced for public and enjoying ourselves. But you see, to waste 20 minutes to pack up all these hospitality units, race perhaps 20 minutes, half an hour, practice, Saturday, same, Sunday race, and then pack everything and go home.
What was more important to you? You know, I see these days young drivers, I mean, they will do anything to get to Formula One, like there is nothing else apart from Formula One. Question for you, what was more important to you as a driver, be in a winning car in any series or be in Formula One in any car?
No, more interesting to be winning in anything. You know, it could be sports cars, anything. You know, I met Sid Taylor at Silverstone. I had some Formula 5000 races with him and McLaren. And that was also good racing. I liked very much. I met a lot of good drivers, Frank Garner, and all of them from that time.
Talking of drivers, the drivers you raced against, you saw racing in your racing life, who were some of the top drivers in your opinion?
You mean overall?
Overall, yes.
Yeah, I think I agree with Stirling Moss. Fangio is my hero because I met him and Gonzalez 25 years ago. I put some pictures into Facebook here yesterday from 25 years ago. And when you be together all racing drivers, Fangio, Gonzalez, Stirling, Tulle de Graffenried, and being in a party and being up on a dancing floor. And, you know, the gap between all drivers and myself have shrinked a lot, you know. You come more near, more like good friends instead of being looking at them like an idol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get to know Jochen Rindt, who was the king of Formula 2?
Yes. I was actually supposed to drive for him and Bernie after a Formula 2 race I had in Rouen. But that deal never came through, and then Jochen got killed. So I actually got his Formula 1 drive after. I know him. He lived next to Stewart and Bonnier. Everybody lived up in Switzerland at that time. That's why I moved there too.
Okay. Apart from Marcus Ericsson, who is from your country and racing in GP2, nice kid, are there any young Swedish drivers who can be the next Ronnie or Reine in Formula One in the near future?
I don't believe it. It's a question about money, and we don't have the money. I can't see any future in this, but I hope they succeed. But very, very difficult. It's the same. All Europe is soon bankrupt. It's not too bad. It's not too good in America too, but Europe is now terrible.
Now, your neighboring nation, Finlandia, they keep pumping out lots of racing drivers. How come we see so many good drivers from Finland and not from your country?
Here it's like Jackie Stewart told me one day, you must be able to make some money out from being a Formula One driver in Sweden. And I said, if you say racing in Sweden, you are bad out there, you know. They don't like. But Finland have some nice people. I don't remember the name. But they are up in the government, and they are in the, well up, you know, in Europe. And to drive rally and racing in Finland, that's something good. Here, it's can't mention it, you know.
I hear you. Okay, talking of Marcus, there is a gentleman in your country, Jorgen Bouvet, who runs his fan club, and he has a question for you. He wants to know, when you look back at your time in racing, do you feel lucky to survive the era, as there were so many fatalities in that time frame?
Yes, I do very much, because I enjoy life, you know. It's very good. I travel around and look, yeah. I especially like nowadays Thailand. I can have, it's like turning the clock back, perhaps rude to say, but turning the clock back 50 years, I have animals and gardens, like that, all I missed for 50 years, nearly 40, say.
How much time do you spend in Thailand in a year?
Yeah, seven months a year have been now, but I think I will spend more time after seeing this, they call it summer here, you know, it's, I think I stay down there better. I don't know, we'll see.
And you know this gentleman who was a designer at Ferrari, Rory Byrne, he also spends a lot of time in Thailand. Do you ever hook up with him for some fine Thai food?
No, I don't know where he stay.
Well, he runs a scuba school, a scuba diving school somewhere in Thailand.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can find him through your racing contacts.
Yeah. I would like to find out.
Yeah, I'm sure people at Ferrari can help you. And, you know, there used to be a very famous song, One Night in Bangkok. Do you ever listen to that song when you are traveling to Thailand?
No. But many nice music in Thailand. But I try to learn a little bit Thai, but very difficult.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult to talk and to write. Impossible. Yeah. But it's... beautiful country and good people.
Yeah, and I hear they are trying to, the gentleman who is the part owner with Dietrich Mateschitz and Red Bull, he's from Thailand. I hear they're trying to get a Formula One race there.
Yeah, they promised to have one to honor the, you know, the owner of Red Bull was Thai.
Yes.
Yeah, he died this year, 93 year old, and he was number 205 richest in the world.
Wow.
So here, yeah, this yeah, what's the name, he is just agent, but very good. He make very good. So Thai people and number 205 in the world, that's good.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very impressive.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, going back to racing, you raced it all over the world at places like Rouen, Österreichring, Kyalami, Enna in Sicily. When you look back at your racing career, not just Formula One, the whole racing career, what are you most proud of? What memories do you cherish most? And if you could answer the question, who are your friends from your racing days that you are still in contact, I will appreciate.
Out of the races, you know, one season, I made 33 races in 16 different chassis. And I was going Argentina, Mexico, Europe, and I had over 170 hours in aeroplane, because Joe taught me how to count from taking off to landing. So I was very busy at that time. But a good story, I met the son of Peter Gettin at Silverstone.
Mm-hmm.
And he had found a good book of some, what it called, Brown and Brewer, with all the addresses of the girls.
Oh,
so
beautiful.
I was busy today to try to trace some of them, but could not find. No, I have a list here. But we had a lot of good fun laughing at his father and blonde, brunette, and redheads book.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question.
I could not find.
Do you really need to read this book once you get to Bangkok?
Yeah.
They have very nice looking ladies in Thailand, I'm told.
Yeah. I know. I have one.
Oh, good. Good for you, sir. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we have quite a few Thai restaurants here, and I enjoy Thai food. And, you know, the ladies there are also very nice. As they say here in America, easy on the eyes.
Oh, yeah. They are very, very, very nice, and you can talk to them.
Any racing friends you have from your racing days that you are, especially drivers that you are still in contact with?
After being into this club now for 50 years, and we have the Jubilee in Stuttgart, see how many survived, because they were all by then, and many of them have passed by now. So we see how many coming. I know a lot of Schenken, Ganley coming. Yeah, we'll see who's turning up. Peter Westbury, we be in contact. You know, Peter is a taxi driver. Peter Westbury.
And where?
In Tobago, but he drives Learjet. But he call himself taxi driver.
Ah.
That's good. I met him also in at Silverstone. So he promised to come. But we have our meetings. He was in Portugal, and they have a fantastic circuit in Portimão outside Faro.
Oh, yeah.
And EU have put in so much money to all these things, and now I read Nürburgring is bankrupt.
Yes.
But I don't like them make bigger and bigger circuits and go quicker and quicker. Fault, because people can hardly see them.
What is your favorite circuit that you raced at?
I don't think I have any special circuit. Every circuit was a challenge, as I said. But I like street circuit.
Okay.
And Monaco that's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, we said when old drivers were sitting together, you know, could be Brooks now.
Okay.
Watching Formula One, and we say, no, it's very safe, you know. They should put up the curbs. They should have a stone wall. 30 centimeter high, so then learn to drive the circuit. They're just jumping over the curbs, you know, and if something goes wrong, or if we should have done that by that time, everything fall off when you jump over the curb like they do.
Right. Okay, Rainer, last question is from a listener in Switzerland, Jean-Marie, and he wants to know if you still follow Formula One today on a regular basis, and what is the difference, main biggest difference between your time and now?
Yeah, I only watched one race this year from the place. Otherwise, I see a few things on TV. But as I said, you can hardly recognize the cars, drivers, no numbers, no nothing. So I understand people watching who don't know anything. What do they think? That some idiots driving around in circles. They pass very quickly. And I don't know why. They could drive a smaller, tighter circuit, like all the nice circuits that I like. They are more like becoming go-kart circuits nowadays. Okay. They have running off areas, asphalt, everything security. You know, if you went off at that time, it hurts, you know.
So basically what you... Basically, what you're saying is you would like to see, like me and a lot of other people, that Formula One should go back to the 14.2-mile-long Nürburgring.
Yes. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice, you know. I will bring my, I think my son and somebody else to go around in a limo, you know. Want to take people around the circuit, experienced drivers with a BMW or whatever you use. Oh, that's... They've been with me. They was in Monaco for the historic. I like historic very much.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why every second year I go to Monaco for the historic. There you meet a lot of friends, you know, from mechanics, everybody. That's better than Formula One, actually.
Okay.
I enjoy it more.
Okay, finally, how about a message? We have listeners all over the world, and I'm pleased to tell you we have listeners in Sweden also. Would you like to say a message to people who listen to our podcast, please? Anything you want to say?
Yes. Have a good life and enjoy racing and enjoy better weather than this summer we had in Sweden or Europe. It's dreadful. But keep going and have fun.
Okay, great. Rainer, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Rainer, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.